Welcome to the Invest with Clarity podcast, where you will learn how success in investing, as in life, is the result of absolute clarity. Mark Pearson of Nepsis in Minneapolis, Minnesota, shares his passion for portfolio management and commitment to transparency and communication to allow investors to fully understand what they own and why, bringing them to clarity in their investments. And now, here are your co-hosts, Matt Halloran and Mark Pearson.
Hello and welcome to another Invest with Clarity podcast with Mark Pearson. On the last podcast, we got a chance to look under the hood a little bit more about the thinking that happens at Nepsis. And I wanted to ask Mark today about two terms that he's utilized on different podcasts that I don't necessarily think people truly understand what they mean and why they're applicable. And we are calling this podcast the Alpha and the Beta, because those are two terms that you're going to hear thrown around a lot, but I don't think necessarily now all of you as the listeners understand what that means. And to be brutally honest, I don't think I totally understand what it means. So we're going to turn to who I consider an expert, which happens to be Mark Pearson, to talk a little bit about what the alpha and the beta is. All right, brother, where do we begin?
Well, I think the first place we need to begin is the definition, defining what is alpha and what is beta. And it's very easy in the investment world to make things complicated. And of course, Nepsis is invest with clarity. Nepsis means ultimate clarity. In fact, let me define once again for people who maybe haven't listened to previous podcasts what the word Nepsis means. Nepsis is a Greek word which means to be watchful, alert, and vigilant with a clear and sober mind against illusions and fears, thus allowing one to obtain ultimate clarity. And I believe that one of the biggest reasons investors, another, as you know, Matt, there are many reasons why investors are not successful. But I think one of the biggest reasons that investors are not successful is because they become fearful. And they have biases that are tied to the fears that they have in investing, right? So my belief is that the greater clarity you have about your investments, the more educated you are about the decisions that you can make, and therefore your decisions become more educated as opposed to emotional in nature. Okay. So understanding that as the basic premise, clarity, trying to, you know, clarity, I've often said a lot of things about clarity. One of them is, could you put a price on clarity? You know, you want to argue about how much you pay a money manager or pay an advisor. Can you put a price on clarity? I would argue no, because there have been situations that because we had clarity, ultimate clarity, it saved or made investors great money on their portfolios or saved them money. But secondarily, clarity is designed to be clear, right? Yet clarity can be very complex. I think it's a double-edged sword, if you will. So you can talk to a real like scientific, analytical person who has their CFA, who likes to tell you how smart they are, where I prefer to continue to use, Matt, the KISS principle. For those who don't know, keep it simple, stupid, right? So let me give you the key, what I would call the basic bottom line of alpha and beta. Alpha is a statistical measurement of the excess return on an investment relative to the return of a benchmark or index. So if the S&P 500 does 10% and your portfolio does 12% and your portfolio is comparably managed to the S&P 500, you've created 2 percentage points of alpha. Now, as we've talked about on previous podcasts, most people use the S&P 500 benchmark to compare their portfolios. And we say that's one of the dumbest things you can do. And in fact, we discourage people from using benchmarks because all it does is skew what are really the facts as it pertains to your portfolio. We believe the only benchmark should be knowing what you own and why you own it and feeling comfortable with what your portfolio is doing.
Now, but there you have on previous podcasts, and I'm going to pause you there because I think I want to get a little bit deeper. You explained why, and I think this is an applicable time for you to re-explain why using the S&P as a benchmark is really just nonsense.
Okay, so first of all, a portfolio should not have 100% of its money in the S&P 500. You should own small cap, mid cap, large cap. You should be what we would refer to as asset allocated. You may own some bonds. You may own some cash. You may own some real estate. You may want to own some commodities. Using the S&P 500 index is not an apples to apples comparison. Additionally, Chuck has talked a lot about this, our head of research. People view the S&P 500 as a passive index. Well, it's really not passive because there are decisions on what company should go into that S&P 500. There are moves being made in the portfolios on a daily basis because the S&P 500 is what's called a market cap weighted index. So you could see the S&P 500 or the NASDAQ do two completely different things in one day because one stock or two stocks could literally impact the index on that day. So I have a good friend. He manages his own money. He's getting started. He's a smart guy. But he was telling me that his portfolio is up 80% this year. And I'm thinking, well, that's pretty good. He goes, yeah, but I know I'm taking on a lot more risk. And I said, well, what are some of the companies you own? Let me guess. You got some Microsoft, I'm assuming. Yep, got some Microsoft. Got some Google in there. Got some Facebook in there. These are all the top S&P 500 stocks. So at the end of the day, not understanding how a benchmark works gives you no reason to use that as a benchmark. A benchmark should be two things. Are you on track to have the financial future you want to have? And are my investments doing the best they can?
So you, with your personal benchmark, like if I was a client of yours, I would have my benchmark. I need X amount of rate of return in order to live the lifestyle that I want in retirement or to achieve my financial goals. Is that a fair statement?
That's the only number you should be concerned with.
Right. So if you create alpha in my portfolio, that's just freaking gravy, right?
Correct. It's icing on the cake. Good. It may allow you to retire sooner. Mm-hmm. It may make you decide, you know, I don't need to have such a volatile portfolio. And we'll get to that. That's beta.
Okay.
You may decide, you know, maybe I'm going to make some of these investments, quote unquote, I don't want to say less conservative or more conservative, because right. I think that's an incorrect statement. I think what people should think about is less volatility. See, people construed volatility as risk.
Right.
That's incorrect.
Right.
Volatility is not risk. Volatility is opportunity to take advantage of volatility to buy things on sale. Risk is, I believe, the ultimate risk is not knowing what you own and not having the ability to know why you own it. I think the ultimate risk is not knowing where the biggest risk in your portfolio that could inhibit you from accomplishing your financial goals long term. That's risk.
Sure.
Risk also includes not being appropriately asset allocated. Notice I say asset allocated, not diversified, as it pertains to your investment objectives and your goals. So, yes, risk is relative. Volatility is opportunity. And what you want to be able to do is have a level of clarity that enables you to make the appropriate decisions to help you accomplish that retirement goal that you want to accomplish.
I was just talking to my children because we had created a 529 plan for them many, many, many years ago. And I was showing them on the screen their 529 plan. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't one thing, Mark, in that portfolio that they didn't know what it was. And I was like, dude, Mark's going to be so proud of me for that. Because they were like, oh my God, Dad, I know what this is. I know what this is. I know what this is. And wow, that makes a lot of sense why you made those investments. And it was neat because they'll get into my truck, which is a Ford truck, which is something that they've owned since Ford bottomed out 8 years ago or 10 years ago, right? And they're like, Dad, you own part of this company. I'm like, no, honey, you own part of this company. Right. It just makes them feel like they're more connected, I think, with things instead of so disconnected.
That's the whole purpose of the stock market. Yeah. What people have lost sight of is that the whole purpose of the stock market is the channel, if you will. It's the opportunity for investors to participate mm-hmm. in capitalism.
Right.
That's what the markets are for. Indexes are nothing more than a group of companies that some think tank decided should be quote unquote, in this asset allocation or this diversified portfolio they create, i.e. the S&P 500, the Dow Jones, the NASDAQ, and all the other indexes that are out there. But remember, the stock market was created to allow people to participate in capitalism. We've lost sight of that. Yeah. We have tried to make investing so simple, trying to dummy it down so much that not only have they tried to dummy it down, they've made it more complicated in doing it, and they've taken investors' thought process off the ball. I've used this analogy before. When I was a kid and my parents were investing and their parents were investing, the average holding period of a stock was 8 years. Today, the average holding period of a stock is 8 months. Mm-hmm. So the question I want to ask is it investing when your average holding period of a stock is 8 months? No. Now, day trading has become more popular. The technology, I believe, in some ways has certainly helped investors, but it's also hurt investors because it makes it so easy to buy and sell something now that you can have a trigger finger and end up making a mistake, right?
Yeah.
Now, I do want to say this just to kind of push back a little bit. You always like to push back on me. I'm going to push back on you a little bit. It's always great. Investors should realize this. It is great to know what you own and why you own it, using the analogy of Ford. And your kid's looking at all of these companies. But let me remind our listeners of a very important fact. Just because a company is a great company does not make it a great investment. And just because a company is not a great company doesn't necessarily mean it's not a great investment. Let me say that again because it's important. Mm-hmm. Just because it's a great company doesn't mean it's a great investment. And just as a company that is not great, not a great company, does not mean it's not a great investment.
Sure.
So the theory here is that while you may think a company is great, it does not make it a great investment.
Sure.
And that's why investing isn't as easy as people think it really is. And that said, you've got to have your buy discipline, your sell discipline. You've got to have your criteria for how you make the decisions. And I think this is why you wanted to do this podcast on alpha and beta. Mm-hmm. Because just because, now hear me throw a curveball a little bit. In the analogy I used earlier when I said the S&P 500 did 10% and your portfolio did 12%, that's 2 percentage points of alpha. That does not necessarily mean that that alpha measurement, remember I said it's a statistical measurement. It doesn't necessarily mean that that is the true statistical measurement, because you can also, let's say for an example, you did 12% and the S&P did 10. Well, why did you do 2% more? Is it because you had a 15% position in Tesla and everything else was smaller and Tesla is up 200% or whatever? So the statistical measurement looks at the risk, relative risk, statistically measured of a stock relative to the portfolio, and then gives you that alpha number, okay? So part of that has to do with beta, which would take me right into beta. And beta is the measure of relative volatility. Beta is the measurement of how volatile a stock is, or how volatile a stock is relative to an index, right? Or how volatile a portfolio is relative to its benchmark. So for an example, the analogy I always give is, when you look at risk and a risk relative in the advisors and client's eyes is volatility, right? If you are a growth-oriented investor, I always say that you want your beta to equal your index or be less volatile. If the ultimate goal, in other words, the ultimate goal investing is to have less volatility and greater return. That's the measurement, if you will, that the marketplace tells you. Okay. Remember, this is what the market says.
Okay.
Let me finish my point real quick. Yeah. If you are a more balanced portfolio, when the market goes up 10% and you go down 7, your beta is at 0.7. So it's the volatility relative to the benchmark. If the market goes down 10, you go down 6, five, six, seven, that's more where you want to be if you're a balanced portfolio. Does that mean you own bonds? Not necessarily. Depends how you asset allocate. That's why I'm not a proponent of this cookie cutter, X amount of stocks, X amount of bonds, X amount of cash mentality. You were going to say something.
I was. Well, because on your website, right, one of the things that people can do is they can get their portfolio tested to really see if it's in line. What are you testing? Are you testing the beta here? Are you testing something different? Help me understand what that investment stress test does.
Sure. So the investment stress test is a proprietary process we've created that digs deep into the portfolio to find out what they own, what percentage they own, and how it impacts the overall portfolio. In every stress test we've done, we have shown the investor what their top three holdings were, what the percentage owned of those top three holdings were, and how many total holdings they had. And most portfolios average anywhere between 2 and 10,000 shares or 2 to 10,000 companies in their portfolio. And I, you know, you can lay this report in front of somebody and you say, okay, you own 2,000 companies, 800 companies, 10,000 companies. My question to you would be, do you call that investing? And the answer is no, in my opinion. It's my opinion. You have lack of clarity. You have lack of flexibility. You've watered yourself down, so to speak. You don't create an opportunity really to create a lot of alpha in your portfolio. Now, I said beta earlier and I talked about relative volatility. I like volatility. And our clients who experience a lot of volatility have experienced above market returns. Now, I have to say, disclose that that's not a guarantee in the future. But historically, over time, that's been the case. And that's because you take advantage of the volatility and your conviction measurement. Remember, we have created our own conviction indicator, a measurement of conviction for a position we're going to own. And that enables us the opportunity to potentially create a lot of alpha. So use Square. We talked about Square before. When Square was at 35 during COVID, my conviction on a scale of 1 to 10 was 10. So knowing it was 10, I put 5% as a target in our growth portfolios, which is the normal starting point for a high conviction position. Well, that position went from 35 to 160 in 6 months. That conviction, while risk was relatively in line with the portfolio at 5%, achieved substantial returns to the client, close to probably 15 percentage points of alpha in the portfolio. And that's why we always say you don't have to take the risks to get high returns.
Right.
And beta is one of the greatest tools that's created of the relative volatility of a stock. And there's a lot of smart people and there's a lot of research that put together the statistical measurement of a stock and its volatility to the market. And that's why people who focus so much on the volatility of the stock are focusing on the wrong thing. Because if they were to look at the beta, which you can go to Yahoo Finance and it will give you the beta. They don't tell you how they give it to you, but that's, you know, they at least give you the number, right? You can get a good understanding of how volatile a stock is relative to the market. Mm-hmm. And if the beta is over 1, you better expect it to be volatile. And if the beta is 2, like it is for a lot of growth stocks, if you got a beta of 2 and the market goes down 10, statistically speaking, that stock's going to go down 20%. Ooh. But if the market goes up 10%, statistically, that stock should go up 20%. Now, that's the cookie cutter. I mean, that's just the simplistic way of saying it, but that's also how you create alpha. So what we did during COVID is we sold low beta names, bought more high beta names, even though beta people construed as risk. We don't. We construed it as opportunity. We bought more high beta and basically enabled our portfolios to significantly outperform the markets in 2020 so far.
Right.
So again, I you wanted to go under the hood. We're going under the hood.
Yeah.
I don't encourage investors to do what I'm doing because there are other criteria that we use when we make these decisions than just looking at the beta.
Right. And I wanted to just kind of highlight that. And part of the onus for this podcast today is I happen to be an investor, and a lot of it has to do with just because what I do for a living, and I actually think it's a whole bunch of fun. And so I have alerts on different stocks that I'm watching and things like that. These are individual companies. Yep. And so I get these stock things, and it is just utter gibberish nonsense that this number contradicts this number and that this number is supposed to be within this range. And if it is, then, well, I'm not going to tell you what to do, but it's in the range. And I was reading one this morning. I started laughing out loud. And like my dog's looking at me as I'm looking at my phone. And I'm like, you wouldn't understand this either, dude. So don't look at me like that. But I have another quick question for you before you answer that.
Yep.
I've never asked you this question. And I might get you this time since you tried to get me there and well, you did and won, but I'm going to try to get you here, which is how many investments are too many investments?
It's a great question. And there are different studies that have been done that show how many investments is too many investments and how many investments is too little. In general, from studies we've seen, and we've said this for years. In fact, it was in our original corporate presentation that we used to put out. And that is, depending on what study you read, anywhere between 20 to 40 companies is an appropriately asset allocated / risk portfolio. In other words, when people say, take the risk out of owning individual stocks, I'm sorry, that's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. Because risk, what do you mean by take the risk out of owning an individual stock? This is why we say in our investment policy statement, no one company should make or break the long-term performance of your portfolio. Doesn't mean it could have short-term impact, but we're saying long-term impact, okay? Should have a negative impact on your long-term performance. Now, we have a certain percentage that we max out that are willing to hold based on the conviction that we have of the company that we own. Hence, know what you own and why you own it and have your conviction, okay? But studies have shown that, you know, once you really get above 40 companies in your portfolio, you're really not getting any sort of statistical benefit of risk reduction.
Huh.
So in theory, you really don't need to own more than 40 companies in your portfolio. Now, for us, we vacillate depending upon the model, the investment objective of the portfolio. But we, in general, on the low side, will own 25 companies. On the high side, we'll own about 35 companies.
Wow.
And we have done this with our portfolios in terms of relative volatility for more conservative portfolios. We've really done it without owning much of any bonds. Hmm. And we think bonds are extremely risky. So we've actually believed that we've taken an element of risk out of the portfolios, kept the level of volatility associated with what the client is comfortable with, and allowing ourselves to create the alpha that we have done over time.
What didn't I ask you that I should have asked you about the alpha and the beta? Did I miss anything?
The only thing I would add to that is if you're an investor and you're working with a financial advisor, I would say don't ask about alpha and beta. Half the time they may not know what it means, or if they do know what it means, they don't have the appropriate data to statistically measure it. Mm-hmm. It still boils down to, is my portfolio doing the best it can? And am I on track to have the financial future I want to have? A lot of investors make the mistake of grading their money manager or grading their advisor, number one, over a short period of time, not a long period of time, and number two, the rate of return of their portfolio relative to an incorrect benchmark, i.e. the S&P 500. This is why so much money has flowed in the S&P 500. Now that pendulum seems to be swinging the other way. People are starting to now talk, maybe active management's better than the index. Look, you don't live in a world where one's better than the other over time. I think that owning 500 companies is too many companies. And if you're going to own the S&P 500, you have to own international, emerging markets, small cap and mid cap, which the S&P 500 isn't doing, which is more important to the asset allocation strategy for the investor. In other words, what is in the investor's best interest? But people, well, gee, the S&P 500 index is so cheap, I'm just going to put all my money in there. That's the wrong attitude and the wrong position to take. You have to be able to understand your buy discipline, your sell discipline, the relative volatility of your portfolio, and the risk you are taking to get not only the volatility you are getting, but the returns that you're getting as well.
Could you imagine? I want everybody to just kind of close your eyes, unless you're driving, so please don't. But I want you to imagine what it would be like to sit down with your financial advisor and be able to look at your portfolio and understand every single position that you have in there. Because there's, you know, what Mark was just saying, you know, 40-ish, right? Mid-30s. Could you imagine that? What a great annual review meeting that would be, instead of diving into 19 different prospectuses that have 18 billion stocks in it and you don't know what the heck any of them are. Could you imagine that? I mean, Mark, your clients have to sit down with you and with your advisors and say, well, you know what? This just makes sense.
Well, this is part of the reason, quite frankly, during COVID and in the drop of 35% in a very short period of time, we virtually got no phone calls. What clients did is they logged into their accounts and they actually saw the activity. Mm-hmm. And one client jokingly said, which is an incorrect statement, but it was funny at the time, he said, quit making me so much money. Mm-hmm. In other words, we had bought these stocks, they bought them, they started rebounding quickly. And of course, you don't make any money until you sell something. Right. But the reality is that when you can see the activity going on in your portfolio, it makes a big difference. I think this is one of the reasons why you're seeing the pendulum, in my opinion, I think, one of the reasons why you're seeing the pendulum swing back to more active management from passive management is that COVID unleashed the cracks in the ideology of investing in indexes and in what's called static rebalancing portfolios. Most financial advisors, or I shouldn't say most, many financial advisors use the old modern portfolio theory asset allocation strategy by buying mutual funds and exchange traded funds and large cap, mid cap, small cap, growth, value, international, yada, yada, yada. And they end up owning thousands of stocks, right? And their theory is you buy it, you set it, and you leave it go.
Yes.
I think that's one of the worst strategies you could do. There's nothing in investing in history that I think with common sense would say, yeah, I'm just going to buy this business. I'm going to buy these businesses. I'm going to buy these assets and I'm going to set it and forget it. Right. You're setting yourself up for some sort of a bomb in the future, some sort of event that could alter your thought process and thus inhibit your ability to be successful. This is why I always say, Matt, for an investor, don't you want every possible advantage you can get to help you accomplishing your goals?
I do.
Of course. Clarity is the ultimate tool to help you do that.
Now, everybody, today was a lot of fun because I did really, really want Mark to walk through these two very technical things that a lot of advisors and financial planners throw around so that you would gain a greater understanding of what these two technical terms mean. But what the discussion turned into is stuff that we haven't actually talked about in the past, which is really the nuts and bolts of the philosophy. I mean, when we talk about, you know, kind of lifting the hood and checking the engine, I think today was one of the best engine checks that we've had. And it is your responsibility as an intelligent investor to share this information with other people because there's so much misinformation out there. There are so many news agencies, articles, publications that are misinforming, in our opinion, the true way to have not just clarity, but investment success. So with that, if you have not subscribed to the podcast, make sure that you do. If you want to find out how to get an investment stress test, just go to investwithclarity.com. And you can also contact different advisors through the Invest with Clarity website. And even better, There's blogs, there's white papers, there's all sorts of great stuff on this website that will help you make a better decision for your long-term investment. Mark, thanks for being on the show.
Always good to be with you. Thanks, boss.
So for everybody at Nepsis, this is Matt Halloran, and we'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
The content discussed is for informational purposes only. It is not a solicitation or recommendation for any securities that may be mentioned herein. Advisory services offered through Nepsis, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor.